Everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service to the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on your water rights when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party, limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about all of this is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of the above. And if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It is more binding. It is more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know less about that marriage contract than you do about your military obligation or your house payments. Now, 67% of all marriages end in divorce. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. That's why you ought to know, and you ought to understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract, and you ought to know and understand that before you get married. And you ought to write that contract yourself instead of letting the state write that contract for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and about this marriage contract. To do that, just call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. It's an easy one to remember, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine, send us a free, or send and get your free general law CD package. Just send us an email or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, we're talking about your water rights. Now, you may be a city dweller living in Austin, Texas. This water is going to hit home here pretty shortly. When they're pumping your water from Amarillo, Texas, down to Dallas through a pipeline, it's going to cost you significantly more money than it costs you today. And you ought to be thinking about that because, you know, if you're a homeowner and your costs go up, say your water bill, as I mentioned to you in the last program, goes up by about five times because that's what they're targeting. They're going to move your water bill up about five times. That's the objective. That's the goal. That's what privatization is all about. Now, they've tried that in a couple of countries down in South America. And the people down there, when their water bills go up by about five times, it just blows their minds and they riot in the streets and overthrow their government in Bolivia and Peru. That's what's happened down there. There's three or four of these big water companies. There's one from Germany, one from England, and one from France. And they're going around the world buying up municipal water companies. And they found out that in the United States and Canada, they can come over here, buy it up, multiply your water bill by five times, and you people don't complain about it like they do in South America. That's what they've discovered. So they have targeted the United States and Canada and the South Africa and Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe. They've targeted those for privatization because the people that live here in the West are more docile. Maybe you've been on fluoride longer and you don't complain as much. So I told you about the Krebs newsletter last time. And then I want to start off by telling you about A.V. Krebs again. This is a liberal newsletter. See, here at the Law Hour, we subscribe to liberal as well as conservative so that we can find out what the hell people are thinking about. What's the other side doing? Now, I'm pretty conservative, but I do like to read Krebs from time to time, and he just makes my blood boil, you know, as I read this liberal diatribe, you know. But every now and again, old Cole Krebs comes up and he says, well, did you think about the other side of that? And oftentimes, no, I didn't think about the other side of that. I just heard about my market analysis over here and from all of my conservative friends, and I didn't think about that. And so from time to time, I need to be brought back down to earth, you know, and have somebody say, hey, wait a minute, Gordon, there's another side to the story over here. Maybe I've heard about that. So from my communist and socialist friends over here, once in a while, they want to straighten me out. And so I like to warn all of my listeners that this is a liberal newsletter and a good one. Good. I like Krebs. He's a pretty good guy. Now, it's A.V. Krebs. That's all you got to know. It's just A-V-K-R-E-B-S at Comcast.net. Now, if you just send him a request, he'll send it to you free. Free. Doesn't cost you anything. Now, it costs him money to put it out, and he has to get paid. And so he relies upon your voluntary contributions. He doesn't tell you that it's $129.95 a year or that it's $39.95 a year or anything else. I think it's fully worth the $129.95 a year. But he puts out two newsletters, two, not one, two. One is called The Calamity Howler, and the other is called The Agribusiness Examiner. And they're 12 pages each, come out once a week. That's 52 issues a year. That's 104 newsletters you're going to get. I suggest $30 each per year. That's $60. That's $5 a month, isn't it? Yeah, $5 a month, surely. I mean, hell, you can't get your local newspaper for $5 a month, for crying out loud. And there's probably a hell of a lot less in your newspaper. I mean, it's a liberal diatribe rag sheet anyway. And it doesn't contain any real information. This is a liberal rag sheet, but this one's got real information in it. That's the thing I like about this. Is, well, Krebs got something to say. You may not agree with what he's telling you, but at least he's got something intelligent to say. Most liberals don't have anything intelligent to say to start with. All right, so now $30 a year each, that's $60 a year, $5 a month is what I suggest. But hell, if you're poor and can't afford to pay it, he'll send it to you free. But for those of you that can afford to pay a couple of bucks, please do. Now, I started off here with the Agricultural Examiner talking about water, the entire issue. This is the April 30th issue, is about water. Fighting the corporate theft of our water, sinking feeling in west of Fresno County is for real. Court rules Imperial Valley Canal to be lined. California greenery sucking up more of the state's water. California water projects, it's time to end the water wars. An arid west no longer waits for rain. Investors bet on rising costs for scarce water. Now, those are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 articles that are contained in. Now, these articles were gleaned from the news media around the world. I mean, Krebs goes around the world just like Chapman and Sanders and others to glean various topics and then report to us. And he does a hell of a good job at it. So last time we were talking here about the corporate privatization of your water supply. Do you have an idea about what that's going to mean to you living in Amarillo, Texas, or Philadelphia, or Los Angeles when they privatize your water system? Your water bill is going to go up by about 5 times. So whatever it is that you're paying for water today, just add 5 times to that, and that's what you're going to be paying for your water in the future. Now, you want to price that in to the price of the house and figure on that's what your utilities are going to be costing you at some point in the future, and can you afford to live there? Can you afford that house in that location? Now, here's the crux of the issue. Privatization means transforming citizens into customers, or, in other words, making people engaged in a democratic process. We're going to change them into consumers looking to get the best possible return. It also means taking our most important resource and putting it at the whims of the market. Currently, water systems are controlled publicly in 90% of communities across the world, 85% in the United States. Now, let's just understand that 85% of the water systems in America are public water systems. 15% are privatized. But the number is changing very rapidly. In the author's report in Thirst, in 1990, 50 million people worldwide got their water services from private companies. In 2002, it was 300 million and growing. All right, so that's a 6-fold increase over the past 15 years or 17 years. It's grown by 6-fold. And if the New World Order has their way, they will privatize every waterworks in the world. They will control your water and the price you pay for it. Now, you talk about a stranglehold. They already control your gasoline and the price that you're going to pay for it. Now, that's something I can live without. I won't live as well without it, but I can live without gasoline, but I can't live very well without water, which is what prompted me to tell you right now. Out in Colorado, you people that have a well in your state, I reported this to you here in the first program in the series. I said in the report, you're entitled to 1 acre foot of water. Well, hell, ladies and gentlemen, that's 4 or 5 times more than you're going to use in a year. You're only using 7,000 gallons a month. That's about, 100,000 gallons a year. Well, there's 326,000 gallons of water in an acre foot. So that's easily 3 times more water than you're going to use. But I'm going to show you here, your allocation for 1 acre foot of water in Colorado is going to be cut to a half and then to a quarter. And then it's going to be cut to a tenth. And then they're going to put a meter on your well, and then they're going to sell you your water under your ground. And that's what's coming. Now, the way to beat that is to get in, such as the ranchers did back in 1866. The ranchers out in the West, under what they call the prior appropriation doctrine, they're entitled to that water because it's hereditary. They can move it. They can buy it. They can sell it. It's a commodity. They own it. The trick is for beneficial use. So as long as you've got that water right, for beneficial use, you can keep it forever, or they got to pay you for it if they're going to take it away from you. But if you don't have your water right claimed, then as they pass this new legislation, they just take it away from you. That's the bottom line. And in Idaho, there's a treaty with the Nez Perce Indians. That's what affects your water rights up there. And in various locations, there are treaties, there are water rights, there's statutory legislation. There's water is a valuable asset that you own. And I mentioned that in the last program down in Texas. All the water that's under your ground, you own it. You can pump out as much as you want. Make sure that you get that locked in right now. Lock it in right now. So that as the state of Texas changes their law, you've got a right to all the water that's under your ground. And then if they want to take it and then they want to take more of it for San Antonio, they got to pay you for it. And I reported to you, a guy that did that. He went down there, drilled a well, put in a catfish farm. He owned the water that's under it. He sold it for $12 million to the city of San Antonio. God bless him. More power to him. That's what privatization is all about. I think privatization ought to be for the little guy down here at the bottom of the barrel. Whether you sold it for $12 million or you sold it for $12,000. That if you're a truck driver, a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician, you're just a little homeowner down here. By God, if the corporations can make millions off of the water, why can't you make a few thousand off of your water? Now, of course, if you don't want to take the time, effort, and energy to do it, well, that's your choice in life. But then when this comes down at some future date, you know, don't sit there and say, oh, I didn't know. Now look what they've done. People cry and they write me letters and emails and they cry about this, that, and another thing. And I have to tell them, you know, say, well, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. But I didn't know. Hell, you got a college degree. Most of you people out there have been to college, for crying out loud. You're a hell of a lot smarter than I am. I'm a high school dropout. But I'm not brain dead. And unfortunately, when you go to college, you end up brain dead. That college is a debilitating experience. That's been my observation. I've been watching you people for years. And you go to college and you lose your ability to think. Can't think anymore. Now, there's the crux of the issue. Privatization means transforming citizens into customers. Do you want to be a customer? Citizen to customer. Now, there are significant environmental considerations. With private corporations, substantially, sustainability can be tossed out the window. They're not concerned about pumping the Oglala Aquifer dry. They don't care about that. It's going dry in 16 years. I reported that to you before, whether we like it or not. Nobody's going to change what they're doing or the habits that they've got. When that thing goes dry, 40% of American agriculture is going down the tubes. What do you think that's going to do to the economy? I mean, let's just be intelligent people. We faced peak oil in this country in 1972. Up through the 50s and the 60s, you know, and into the 70s, we Americans produced all of our own oil right here in the United States. Every drop of oil we used. And anytime we needed more oil, we just went to Texas and turned up the spigot. And Texas and Louisiana could produce that oil. They produce about a third of our oil right now. But unfortunately, they couldn't keep up with it. And that's where we're headed with this water thing. And there's coming a peak water problem. Peak. Now, somebody's going to write me a letter and they're going to say, yeah, Gordon, but it's political. What the hell difference does that make? What difference does it make if it's politically induced or if it's physically induced? Are you going to have any more water coming out of your faucet? I mean, come on, kids, let's grow up and get real. I don't know if it's political or if it's physical. What difference does it make? It's coming, so you might as well get ready for it. It's kind of like $6 a gallon gasoline. Boys and girls, if the people of Europe can pay $6.38 a gallon for gasoline, Americans and Canadians can pay $6.38 for gas, and that's where we're headed, and that's where we're going, and that's what you're going to pay. Make up your minds to it. And then figure out, well, how is that going to affect my lifestyle? Well, if you're living 66 miles from your job, it's going to affect your lifestyle very dramatically. Fortunately, here at the law school, I commute 62 steps from my kitchen to my desk. 62 steps. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of them are down the stairs. So I have a very short commute, which I use no gasoline to get from my breakfast table. When I get up in the morning from my breakfast table and I go to work in my office, I'm 62 steps from my office. Now, if you're 62 miles, you know, from your office, and you're paying $6.38 a gallon for gas, it's going to impact you. And if your water bill goes up by five times, which is what Krebs reports here in one case, and I'm not saying that your bill is going to go up five, hell, it might only go up four, maybe only three, hell, maybe it only double. If it only doubles, that won't be too bad. But it would be so much better if you owned your own water, wouldn't it? Climate change is a warning that uncontrolled abuse of the Earth's natural resources is leading toward planetary catastrophe. The authors write in the book, Thirst. Who is to set the necessary limits to the abuse of the environment? Private companies fighting for market share are totally incapable of doing that. Privatization has been pushed aggressively at the federal level for decades, but especially so in the last 6 years. There's a kind of fire sale of everything in the public sector right now, said Alan Snitow. Water, we think, is the line in the sand. When your water is actually a profit mechanism, people really react negatively to that. Thirst beautifully documents the coalitions that are forming in communities that are fighting back, but the battles are not easy. They must confront massive political muscle and unlimited financial resources of multinational corporations, not to mention our society's religious belief in the power of the marketplace. You know, we've always thought of air as being free, you know, as free as the air, or as free as the water. Boys and girls, if they can charge you for water, can't they charge you for air? Can't we come up with a mechanism by which we can charge you for the air you breathe? Well, let's get water out of the way first. Privatizing municipal water systems is globalization come home, said Deborah Kaufman. In 2000, Bechtel privatized water in Cochabamba, Bolivia. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'll spell it for you. C-O-C-H-A-B-A-M-B-A. Maybe it's Cocha. Yeah, that's probably it. Cochabamba, Bolivia. Anyway, Bechtel goes down to Bolivia with such miserable consequences that it was shortly driven out of the country in an incredible feat of cross-class organizing. But just a few years later, it was awarded a $680 million contract to fix Iraq's ruined water systems. That's Bechtel. And they still don't have water in Baghdad. What's happening in Iraq is really emblematic of what the Bush administration is doing, said Kaufman. We view the privatization of water in the United States as the World Bank come home, the third worldization of America and of American communities. It's part of the New World Order program. It turns out the United States is an attractive place for multinationals looking to make inroads in the water business. The three main players are the French companies called Suez and Veolia, that's V-E-O-L-I-A, Veolia, formerly Vivendi, and the German group RWE. The companies first pushed water privatization in developing nations, but in many instances, those attempts didn't pan out as planned, it being difficult to gauge governments or to gouge governments and customers that don't have a lot of money. Public Citizen reports that the United States, by contrast, now here's the United States, remember I mentioned this? Now the United States, by contrast, are more willing to pay these exorbitant demands. First of all, because we've got more money. Hang on. All right, now the United States, by contrast, presented the promise of a steady, reliable revenue stream from customers willing and able to pay water bills. The companies that already controlled the small percentage of U.S. water held privately were bought by the big three. Veolia picked up U.S. Filter, Suez got United Water, and RWE took over American Water Works. The results have been disastrous. As the book Thirst shows, rates are increasing, quality is suffering, customer service is declining, profits are leaving communities, and accountability has fallen by the wayside. In Felton, California, a small regional utility ran the water system until it was purchased in 2001 by a California American Water Company, a subsidiary of American Water Corporation, which is a subsidiary of the Thames Water Corporation Limited of London, which has also become a subsidiary of German giant RWE. Now, let me repeat that. For you people in Felton, California, if you want to know who owns your water system over here, your water system was purchased in 2001 by the California American Water Corporation, which is a subsidiary of the American Water Corporation, which is a subsidiary of the Thames Water Corporation Limited, which has also become a subsidiary of German giant RWE. You could not know who to sue if you wanted to in a case like that. It's international law, number one. You got to sue some outfit in Germany under German law to get a remedy in Felton, California, under the terms of a contract buyout that this company has made under international law. How do you like that, kids? Yeah, talk about globalization, huh? Now, residents in Felton saw their rate skyrocket. Thirst reports a woman who runs a facility for people in need saw her water bill increase from $250 to $1,275 a month. $250 to $1,275. How much is it? $1,275 divided by $250 is 5.1 times, 500%. Well, if you can afford to pay $250 a month, you can afford to pay $1,250 a month. That's the bottom line, and that's where you're headed. So make sure you plan that. If you're an urban dweller, make sure that you plan for that, because that's where they're taking it, privatization of your water, just like your gasoline. If you're paying $3 a gallon today, sit back and relax. These are the good old days when gasoline is cheap. Let me describe it. In 1950, gasoline was 27.4 cents a gallon, rounded off to 30 cents. 30 cents a gallon. Prices have gone up 10 times from 1950 to 2007. Gasoline today is $3 a gallon. The amount of time that you had to work in 1950 to buy a gallon of gas, you were getting about $1.75 an hour. So I'm going to put in 1.75 divided by 30. 30 cents a gallon. you had to work about 6/10 of an hour to buy a gallon of gas. 0.058. Is that correct? 0.058 of an hour to buy a gallon of gasoline. Now, today you're getting $16.58, 16.58 divided by $3. It is 5.52. So it's just about the same today as it was then, round numbers, and it's rounded off, about the same. Now, the bottom line is that it's going to $6 a gallon. And when your gasoline goes to $6 a gallon, then they're going to have doubled the price of gasoline, which means that you're going to have to work twice as long to buy that same gallon of gasoline as you did back in 1950 when you were making $1.75 an hour. You know, it's all kind of relative, except that there's a real loss involved, and your after-tax income is much less today than your after-tax income was in 1950. So you're actually getting less and less as time progresses. It's a part and parcel of the program to cut your standard of living. That's why your wife and you working today cannot make enough money to live as well as my dad working by himself supporting his family in 1955. That's the bottom line. This RWE also bought the company controlling the water system in Urbana, Illinois. The locals have been unhappy with the service that it provides. A few months ago, I got a notice on my door saying the water was turned off. And then when it came back on, I needed to boil it before I used it, said the city's mayor, Laurel Pressing. But when she called the number, the company didn't know what was going on. And it was no wonder because the call center was located in Florida. So when you have a problem today with your water, you call the Theodosia City Hall and they'll tell you what the problem is. Once they privatize it, your call center may be in Florida. Or that's pretty close to home. If you live in Illinois and the call center is in Florida, more than likely it will be in New Delhi, India. More likely. Now, the list of abuses and thirst, which represent only a handful of communities, are plentiful. We'll come back to that, the abuses that you can be expecting over your water service if you're an urbanite, when we come back. Well, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And we're heard daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org. And our phone number is 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about your water rights and the upcoming increases in the price of water and the availability of water. Overall, it has provided or proved to be a recipe for disaster. Seeking to consolidate market share, private water companies are merging or buying other companies, creating a volatile and unpredictable market. Hardly the kind of stability required for a life and death resource like water. The corporate interest in water systems in the United States exists for a very good reason. We have a water crisis. Our drinking and wastewater systems are largely designed, or were largely designed, 100 years ago, and in many places, very little improvement has been made. Aging systems, combined with the pressures of increasing population, development, and pollution, have left many communities close to disaster. As a result, corporations have swooped in to offer public officials an easy way out. Not only will they run these aging plants, but they'll save the city millions of dollars in the process. Well, at least that's the promise. So far, it hasn't panned out. In 2005, Thirst reports, now this is 2 years ago, that 200 mayors of large and small cities said that they would consider privatization if it would save money. So the mayors of cities who have the business decisions that they have to make, if they have a water system and it's costing the city $1 million or $2 million a year, and the tax revenue is short in supply, and some corporation comes in and says, we'll buy your system from you. They've done this up in Illinois. They bought the Eisenhower Parkway up there, the toll road. Well, they bought the freeway, and then they turned it into a toll road. Now, here in America, you're witnessing, you're observing the privatization of your toll roads, of your prisons, of your water systems. And as this process continues, you're going to feel the stranglehold of somebody's hand around your throat. That's what it boils down to. And as time progresses along, you will witness a totalitarian dictatorship here in America, imposed not by Gestapo troops pointing a 45 handgun at your head. No, no, no. No. You'll have a mark. You'll have a card. You'll have a chip in your hand. And you'll either do it or you won't get the services that you have to live, like water. How simple is that? Like gasoline. Like a job. How simple is that? In addition to lobbyists, publicists, and ad campaigns, the corporations have also directly gone to the public officials to sell their wares. The U.S. Conference of Mayors has become an engine of water privatization through its Urban Water Council. They write in Thirst that one mayor described a conference of mayor session that he attended as a kind of feeding frenzy, with companies bidding to take over everything from the city's school lunch program to its traffic lights and water services. Financed by the private water industry, staffed by former industry officials, the UWC works hard to give its corporate sponsors FaceTime with mayors. You ever heard that before? FaceTime. Now, lobbyists do that all the time. What they do is they give a representative, say, in the Congress of the United States. And no doubt they do this in your Bundestag in Germany and your parliament, your House of Commons in Great Britain. That's very simple. You know, here comes this big corporation. They come to this representative and say, gee, we'd like to sit down and talk to you. And so they go in their office and they sit down and talk to them for a little while and say, listen, you know, we represent the Bechtel Corporation. We represent this or that big work corporation. And we would like you to come out to our facility and inspect our plant and at our expense. And we'll send our corporate jet to pick you up and fly out to California and take a look at this. And or we'll put you on our jet, or we'll foot the bill and we'll send you to Hawaii, or we'll send you to Scotland to play golf, or whatever it is you'd like to do at company expense. No strings attached, okay? And so the representative says, well, that's part of the perks that goes with, you know, my position, you know, as a representative or a senator. And so he takes these perks. We've been watching this with the Abramoff scandal, you know, and how they buy favoritism, or they buy favors from our representatives and our senator. They buy the laws that they want. That's the bottom line. And that's the essence of a corporate fascist welfare state. And George Bush is promoting it. Well, I'm not blaming the Republicans or Bush. Clinton was doing it. And before Clinton, it was George Bush Sr. Before him, it was Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan. This has been going on, boys and girls, in this country for 100 years. So the corporatization of America has become complete. That's the bottom line. Now the big corporations are moving their operations offshore, which makes all the sense in the world. Think about it. We're moving offshore because it's cheaper to do business in India. So we can do business in India, but we can own your waterworks, and we can charge you full board and charge you five times more. That's what they did in Felton, California. How do you like that, kids? Here's what's coming. Bend over. Americans will furnish their own Vaseline. They wouldn't do that in Bolivia, but here in America, we'll do it. Now, privatization comes from both Democrats and Republicans, particularly the Clinton wing of the Democratic Party. Clinton advanced this in a number of areas. Bush has taken it to the extreme, said Smittow. And across the country, Democrats are guilty as well as Republicans. In Lee, Massachusetts, one of the key people supporting the Veolia privatization is a liberal Democrat. He has a great record with unions on gay rights. He's a social liberal, but he wants to privatize key public services, said Smittow. Now, this issue is a partisan problem, as reported in Thursday. In 1997, the Clinton administration changed the law to the benefit of private companies. Previously, municipal utility contracts were limited to 5 years. Clinton changed it to allow contracts to be extended for 20 years. The rule change unleashed a wave of industry euphoria with predictions that private companies would soon be running much of what is now a public service. And they wrote in the following 5 years, municipal water contracts with private companies tripled. Now, the EPA has projected a needed $446 billion for drinking water infrastructure over the next 20 years, but the money that is needed and that is actually allocated in the budget falls billions short, and Smittow calls the underfunding of public water systems, the public infrastructure as a whole, systemic under the Bush administration. On water, President Bush says he wants to fund private companies to do it. He does not want to give money, even loan money, to government agencies at the local level to improve their own water systems. So the federal government isn't doing anything to help. In fact, it's doing the exact opposite. The Bush administration, for instance, has backed language and legislation to reauthorize existing federal water funding assistance programs that would require cities to consider water privatization before they could receive federal funding. And in lockstep with private industry's goals, the EPA is increasingly playing down the role of federal financial assistance while actively encouraging communities to pay for system upgrades by raising rates to consumers, exactly the strategy that the industry hopes will drive cash-strapped and embattled local politicians to opt for the false promise of privatization. Now, I know somebody's going to write me and they're going to say, but, you know, for instance, your utility company is a private company. Wait a minute. Hang on a second here, kids. We used to have in California, for instance, the Public Utility Commission. Somebody woke up out there in California one day and they said, no, we want to privatize. We want to do away with government oversight of these private corporations, you know, like PG&E or California Edison, or it could be, you know, New York Edison or whatever you want to call your public utility company. Now, we used to have the government comes in with the, in Idaho, for instance, they called it the Public Utility Commission, which would set the rates on Idaho Power Company. Last I heard, the rates are set by the Public Utility Commission, and there's limitations. No, no, they're not doing this with your water company. See, the water company comes in, and there's no PUC. There's no public utility. It's a monopoly. It's a monopoly that has no oversight, and they can charge you whatever the hell they want. Oh, boys and girls, I don't think that's going to fly very well. I don't think that's going to do well at all. Now, you know, if I don't have any input, if I've got a choice to make, and so far I've got a little bit of a choice, if I don't want to buy gasoline from Exxon, I can go over to Shell, and if I don't want to go to Shell, I can go to somebody else. That's your little bit of competition or competitive influence in the marketplace. In America, we used to have thousands of little independent oil producers, and they were all vying for a market share, a place to sell their oil. And so, you know, the marketplace controlled the price of oil. Then the big oil companies, they woke up to the realities of it, and so they funded the environmental movement so that they could get environmental impact statements. And so today, little guys like me, I couldn't go out here and dig a hole on my farm looking for oil. I have to file an environmental impact statement. That's millions of dollars. I've got to have millions of dollars to go out here and prospect for oil. I can't afford that. So that effectively locks up all of the oil from the little guys. So only the big oil companies can afford those kinds of costs. And so they're the only ones that can afford to explore for oil. And there's only 5 major oil companies worldwide. And those 5 companies set the prices. I know it's a monopoly, but that's the way competitive capitalism tends to monopoly. And that's what they've done. So tuck that one away in your heart. It's the way life is. Now, to protect us from these monopolies, our forefathers, years past, you know, came up with a scheme. Okay, we'll have a private utility called PG&E, but we'll regulate them through the public agency called the Public Utility Commission. And if they want to raise their rates, we'll say, well, what's the cause? No, what's the point? And we'll say, well, you can make this much profit, 10%. That's what they're allowed up in Idaho, 10%. Or no, it's 8%, I guess, 8%. Now, that gives you some input into this monopoly. Now, otherwise, we need to have 2 or 3 power companies, you know, with their competing 2 or 3 power grids coming down the street. And then we did this with telephones. Remember, we went to privatization with the telephones. We used to have the PUC used to regulate the telephone rates. And so now somebody's going to say, well, but look, now, see, our telephones now are cheaper than ever. Well, that's true. There's an exception. Well, that's what's going to happen with water, and that's what's going to happen with gasoline. That's what's going to happen with airline fares. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Competitive capitalism tends to monopoly. The monopolists then go to Washington and get the laws passed that they want. Once they get the laws passed that they want, they'll just charge you whatever the hell they want. And you'll pay it because what other choice have you got? And then you'll raise your prices, and then that'll give us price inflation. That's the way that game is played. So make up your mind to it. And what we're dealing with here is your water rights. Now, I'm not here as a politician telling you you need to go down here to city council and lobby. I'm telling you how to get prepared for what's coming. they're going to engineer a water shortage just like they're engineering this petroleum shortage. Which, by the way, while we're on the subject, can save you an email. I'm fully aware of how much oil there is available in the world. So if you're not, let me tell you how much. They tell us that they got a trillion barrels of oil in the world and that we're using about 25 billion barrels a year. So if you take a trillion, which is 1,000 billion, and you take 1,000, you divide that by 25, we have about a 40-year supply of oil. So if we just used oil at the rate we're using it today, worldwide, at today's prices, in 40 years we'll run out. Now that's what they call the cheap, easy crude that you can drill in Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, and around the world. All right. Now that's a 40-year supply. Here in the United States, we have 3.6 trillion barrels. That's 3.6 times the known oil reserves in the world, proven. This is in the form of oil shale. Oil shale. Now, we Americans use about 6 billion barrels a year, just here in America. The world uses 24. We use about 25% of the world's oil. We use 6 billion. So let's take 3,600, shall we? 3.6 divided by 6. That's a 600-year supply. Boys and girls, we have a 600-year supply of oil here in the United States of America at $30 a barrel. $30 a barrel. The Saudi oil comes out of the ground at about $2 a barrel. Now, you can rest assured that the five major oil companies, you know, Shell, Exxon, Chevron, so on, before they spend $30 a barrel developing American oil shale, they'll pump every damn barrel of oil in the world out of the ground at $2 a barrel first. And you don't have to go to the Harvard Business School to figure out what. Just common sense. Meanwhile, they control that trillion barrels of oil. And when they control it, they can regulate the supply. And when they can regulate the supply, they can regulate the price. And little guys like me cannot go out and drill oil wells and compete with them. That's locked up. Congress has shut us off. Little guys cannot go out and compete with that monopoly. The Postal Service has a monopoly, and you can't go out and compete with it. If you could deliver the mail for half as much money, forget it. It's against the law to do that. You can't practice medicine without a license. That's a monopoly. It's shut off to you and me and everybody else. And these monopolies, whether it's medicine, law, oil, water, these monopolies are set up by government. They're created by government. Government creates the laws. You got to have a license to practice medicine. It wasn't always that way. In 1850, if you wanted to practice medicine, go do it. In 1850, you want to go practice law, go do it. Not today. You know, in 1900, you want to drill for oil, go do it. Not today. So government then is in the process of creating these monopolies for the express benefit of those corporations that supply the funding to elect those politicians back to office. Then you go out to the polls and you vote for the guy that's got the best soundbite. It's the way life is. Now, I'm not going to change the politics, and I'm not going to change the price of oil, and I'm not going to change the price of water. But, you know, with a little foresight, you and I can look ahead and we can figure out for ourselves, here's what's coming. So let's pay attention to what's going on, what's coming, and let's see if we can't prepare for it and make some money off of it. That's the bottom line. The guy down there with the catfish farm in San Antonio is a big businessman, and then he figured out how to make millions of dollars off of water. If he can do it, you and I can do it. You won't make millions, but you may make a few thousand. Hell, you might make 100, 200,000. If T. Boone Pickens can make billions off of pumping water out of the Oglala Aquifer and selling it to Dallas and Houston, San Antonio, and so on, well, then why can't you make a few bucks in the process? And you've got water rights, and those water rights are right under your feet, and you need to secure those water rights today so that when this thing goes up, when this thing multiplies, you can cash in, you can take a little piece of the action. Now, there's an ideology that is bipartisan and is part of the old Washington consensus, which is that the market can do everything better. It can be more efficient. I think that we're seeing the chickens come home to roost on this by watching Iraq. You're seeing the ultimate of this kind of vision that they had in mind, where they would turn over the entire government and the resources to private multinational corporations. Now, if what you're looking at in Iraq is efficiency, I think that most people in the world would want themselves counted out. Thirst documents not just the consolidation of power through corporations, but the public resistance that is often, despite seemingly impossible odds, successful. Time and time again throughout the book, citizens responded to local threats, but they realized that they were part of a much bigger effort against water privatization around the world and the wholesale auction of the commons. So even if you don't live somewhere under threat at the moment, there's something for everyone to do. We can work to create a trust for drinking water and wastewater, to drop conditions in federal funding that favor privatizing water resources, to block water corporations from obtaining access to public funding through tax-exempt private activity bonds, and to promote strong public management of water resources. Or you can work to support organizations like Corporate Accountability or Food and Water Watch. And then listen to this. He says, or the Sierra Club. The good folks funded by ARCO. Now, I'm gonna take exception here. Mr. Krebs is a nice guy, and I love him like a brother. I don't think that more government is going to solve the problem. I think that government is the problem. Government is the problem that's creating the water crisis. Government is the problem that has created the petroleum crisis. Boys and girls, if the five big oil companies didn't have a lockhold, a monopoly on oil, and if you and I could go out here and drill for oil, let me give you an illustration. I got a student who's in the oil business. He's in the stripper business, and he buys these oil wells up in Kansas and little places like that, and he sells the oil to the big multinationals. He trucks it, loads it in a truck, and hauls it away. He says they're in the process of closing him down, putting him out of business. Now, those little stripper wells represent 17% of the oil production in the United States, and that 17% is being shut down at a time when we need every barrel of oil we can get. We don't need to shut off another 17%, but the big oil companies want that 17% of the competitive market shut out, and they're going to do it. And they're going to do it through government regulation, government law. The government simply creates the laws that Exxon and Shell and Mobil and all these companies want to lock out the little guys. What you really need is the real marketplace at work, not monopoly, but the marketplace. And we get that, or had that, through hard money. We got that through gold and silver coin. We got that from thou shalt not steal. Just weights and balances. When we Americans practiced the Ten Commandments, that's what we had. We had a free marketplace. When we adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, when we converted from the Ten Commandments to communism, that's when the monopolies really began to flourish. Started around the turn of the century, about 1900. And it has grown. It has exacerbated itself. Now today, we don't practice the Ten Commandments, and today we have centralization in our government, centralization in our business, and there's going to be more of it, not less, more of it. People are not going to turn back to the Ten Commandments. Kids, let's wake up and smell the coffee. It ain't going to happen. So since we're going to turn into a new world order, a one world order of communist proportions, a worldwide communist system, that's what we want, that's what we're going to get. Might as well make some bucks on it in the process. So we're going to see not only shortages in oil, shortages in water, shortages in food, we're going to see rationing. Rationing comes when these crises come to a peak. And when the rationing comes, that's the time for you to make money. Food, clothing, and shelter. Just make up your mind to it. When gasoline is $6.38 a gallon, you need to have an income that'll support that kind of a habit. Just like cocaine or heroin. If you got a gasoline habit, make sure that you got an income that can support it. Hey, we're out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. We're out of time, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.